Good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday afternoon, and we've got an article from Owen Strachan, Gospel Hope in a Hookup Culture, January 23rd in the year of our Lord, 2017, with the 45th President of the United States ruling and reigning, issuing executive orders. That's for you, Joey. And by the way, Joey did a podcast the other day. I don't know if you guys listened to it or not. It was excellent. Yeah, he did a good job from Thailand. I encouraged him to get on and do some podcasts every now and then. And
he had a lot of hits on that.
Did he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you've followed major trends in American life, you've heard of a hookup culture. A brand new book, American Hookup, by sociologist Lisa Wade, shows that boundaries-free sexuality is now the dominant force in the shaping campus sexual culture. Wade's text, driven by reports from students themselves, show that many are bewildered and broken by modern sexual codes. Wade believes the solution to this reality is to dive further into the hookup culture. We need to say yes to the opportunity for casual sexual encounters, she argues, and to a way of being sexual that is forward-thinking and feels good. I've interacted with Wade's work for the Center for Public Theology and believe there's a better approach. Here are four ways we need to respond to hookup culture with the biblical sexual ethic.
Well, Strachan's in charge of the, he heads up the Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood.
Got it.
They did a session at T4G, kind of a pre-session last time before we got up there, so.
Number one, promote an ethic that focuses on the whole person, not quote-unquote hotness. The ultimate goal in hookup culture, according to Wade, isn't just to hook up, it's to hook up with a hot person. Christians aren't squeamish about beauty and sexual attraction. God clearly wants married couples to enjoy the gift of sex, Genesis chapter 2 and Song of Solomon. Sex comes from the pure mind of the Lord, not the foul schemes of a pornographer. But while attractiveness is a component of covenantal love, it's merely a part of our love for our spouse. We're all image bearers, given tremendous dignity and worth by God. Love doesn't reduce to a hot or not screen swipe. Love is complex, multifaceted, and oriented to the whole person. Students are being trained by a secularizing culture to use one another in casual encounters. The church must promote a better vision, one grounded in mutual love and biblical fidelity. That's point number one.
All right. The first sentence, Christians aren't squeamish about beauty and sexual attraction. I don't know. I don't know that we've actually done enough to talk about it. I don't know if we've been forthright enough. I think that we've kind of stuck our head in the sand and pretend like if we don't talk about it, they won't figure it out and it won't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think maybe the point is we're not anti-beauty or anti-sexual attraction. You know, we're okay with those ideas, just within God's framework.
I'm not criticizing the sentence. I'm suggesting that we need to be more forthright with a discussion of sexual attractiveness, that we need to talk about these things in blunt terms to highlight the issues associated with sexual immorality. Mm-hmm. You know, when I say homosexual, that's politically correct. When I say he's taking in the rear, that's a graphic, confrontational, adult, nasty kind of a term. I mean, so we're kind of being trained by the culture of using terms that respect and give dignity to it. But the Word of God doesn't give dignity to that behavior. The Word of God says those people are going to burn in hell. So here we are. We are giving dignity to that which ends up in hell. Do you understand what I'm saying, David?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a... it's easier to skirt the issue. You know, it's easier to stay in, you know, sort of benign terms and hope that whoever you're talking to is understanding what you're talking about. But I think his thing is, I mean, we're in such a visual culture. You know, he talked about swiping right. You know, that's that Tinder dating app thing. You know, I mean, it's such a different world. We can't just stay out here in the abstract of, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that. We need to talk about the issues that are at hand. And if we're just relying on the secular definition that you need to be with a hot person, you know, it emphasizes the physical over everything else.
And we do that with many other sins also. You know, we don't call them drunks anymore. We call them alcoholics, you know, trying to give some credence to their problem.
Well, we did one a few years ago about how, you don't hear words like fornication anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've taken the sin and made an illness out of it and, you know, made it okay.
Almost taking the humanity out of it, you know, the idea, we make it almost clinical.
Right, exactly. Know?
Well, that's what we've done with the abortion issue. It's not a baby, it's tissue.
Yeah, it's a women's health issue, yeah.
Right, right. And so don't call it a baby, not call it a person.
Women's reproductive rights, yeah.
Right, exactly. Because we don't want to deal with the grossness of it, Jack.
But I think back to a couple that I counseled with. I married one of the first marriages I'd done probably 16 years ago or so. They're still together. But they had a difficult time because he was saved later in life, so he didn't have the upbringing and teaching that she received growing up in a Christian home very early through Christian school in a time when this statement was definitely a false statement. Christians were squeamish about beauty and sexual attraction. God clearly wanted married couples to enjoy the gift of sex, but that wasn't taught. And it wasn't talked about. It wasn't talked about the joy that you're going to have when you wait for God's gift. So when they got married, they struggled in the bedroom because she couldn't all of a sudden flip the switch in her mind that sex is bad, it's 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 bad. You're married, it's good. And now he's wanting her to perform regular 1 Corinthians chapter 7 style, and she's
feeling guilty.
Not only that, but she had her psyche involved her body to such a degree that she couldn't become aroused herself even while being given to him, and it was painful. And she had to actually go seek counseling outside to get overcome.
Which tells you that this is much more than physical. You know, there's so many more components that are involved in this discussion.
And that's why hookups don't work. Exactly. That's why you have focus on the whole person, not the
hot. Well, and even below the hookup level, at the more, I'll say, innocent level, with the students we have interacting on Instagram, where we have Woman Crush Wednesday and, you know, Man Crush Monday, where, you know, we have our students that are pointing out someone who is, you don't use the word crush because, you know, they're just a really sweet person. It's an emphasis through our culture of, hey, let's identify that this person's attractive today, even amongst your friends and peers. Whether the hookup is in the thinking or not, it's training them conditionally.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't Facebook do that?
Yeah.
Isn't the goal of Facebook to put a pretty picture of myself on there and see how many likes I get?
Yeah, and I think Instagram ups it even more because it's pure visual. You know, at least some with Facebook, you're getting some thoughts every now and then. Not that they're all good thoughts, but at least there's some words and some articulation most of the time, whereas Instagram is totally visual.
Yeah. And I have heard students through the halls of our academy contemplate pulling pictures off of Instagram because they didn't get enough likes.
Yeah, well, you know, Facebook's kind of portrayed as that's what older people do now.
Yes, yeah. Facebook is skiing, and young people snowboard. Yeah.
They still have them, but
Snapchat takes it even one further, so you don't have
Snapchat
to ponder.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to ponder the whole, do I pull the picture down? It's, I'll just throw it out there, and then it'll be gone in a short period of time anyway.
Yeah, unless somebody screenshots it, and then you're stuck.
Well, it's 10 seconds if it's to you as an individual. It's 24 hours if it's in your storyboard.
Yeah.
Wow. I think the interesting thing about all of this, the point of the focus on the visual and the arousal that comes from the visual is, you know, women are marching on Washington right now because the claim is that we're misogynistic, right? we're anti-woman. Well, what is interesting to me is, you know, and I'm probably going to get some pushback from some of this, but I truly believe it, men are more visually aroused than women. And what
every man will agree with you.
Right, what we see in our culture, and you know, if you deal with women, they're more emotionally aroused, you know, and so, and, you know, arousal takes longer, and all of those things that we associate with the genders. But what we see is now there's a more of a cultural acceptance for women to try to behave like men,
yeah,
to be visually aroused. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, I personally believe that it's put on. That it's not DNA. It's not the way that God created the physiological person to be. Now, can some of that be a little bit trained in through culture? And sure, because we all understand that, you know, part of your environment, you know, that whole nature versus nurture thing. But the reality is, you go back to the X and the Y chromosome, there are things that are associated with that biologically that you just can't get over. I mean, that's why in the military, the test can't be the same for the men and the women, because biologically it's impossible. And I think the same thing is when it comes to relationships and the way we talk about and think about the opposite sex. You know, men are focused on the visual. Men are focused on a hotness. And now we see, I think it's quite guttural. I think it's nasty. We see women behaving more like men now in these environments, these social environments. One of the things that just totally, for me, a personal turnoff is when I see a woman grab a bottle of beer and tip it to her lips. I just want to say, no, that's a men's activity at a bar, okay? You just lost all your beauty in my eyes when you do that.
So Yvette doesn't do that, Jonathan?
No, she doesn't.
Lets him do it,
though. Jonathan, I wonder to what degree the feminist movement has been the foundation.
Well, that's the ironic thing, because the feminists are all behind the stuff that's killing their own movement.
Yeah. Well, I think that the pursuit of hotness thing, it's such a, it's such an anti-biblical stance, in the sense that I can recall as an unsaved young man, and that's the goal, right? The most attractive, the conquering, you know, the idea of achieving a goal. And I always tell the story of, you know, you think back of the dating stories and all this. And I met a girl once after college, and my wife doesn't listen to this, so it's totally fine. But I've told her the story, too. You know, we all have types, right? You know, things that we say, my type of woman looks like this. Well, you know. And there was a girl that I met. She was a basketball player, right? Athletic, you know. And I was thinking, all right, you know, this is perfect. And she was dumb as a bag of rocks. Like, I could not have a conversation with her. But you know what? I hung around for like 2 weeks trying to make it work, because the physical was there. Like, the attraction physically was there. And finally it was like, I gotta leave. She doesn't even understand any of my jokes. You know, like, there's nothing. But the whole goal was, okay, I think she's hot. Okay, I just did air quotes, radio listeners. And so that was the pursuit. But there was nothing. There was no substance to it.
But Dave, I was talking to a young lady a few years back, and another guy, and I kind of invited them both out, kind of hoping to help them, you know, kind of meet each other, kind of thing. And she, you know, gave me in confidence later, you know, what she thought about him. So, oh, he was intelligent, wonderful conversation, great personality, funny guy, and stuff like that. But you know what? I'm just looking for somebody hotter. and it showed you know, I'm talking probably 10 years past what you're talking about in a time frame where you start to get this idea. So now this push for women to be like men is now men are starting to face that same scrutiny of being swiped left or right.
May contribute to what John is saying is women becoming more masculine and at the same time men becoming more feminine. And we've, you know, I think you've seen the video, It's Not Gay, that the American Family Association did, and there's a former a guy that got saved out of homosexuality on the video or DVD, and he says the saddest thing in the world is a gay bar on a Saturday night because you got all these 45 and 50 year old guys sitting around because nobody wants them.
Right.
Because that culture is driven by physical hotness, right? And so the young guys are getting preyed on by the 25 and 30 year olds, and then those young guys become the 25 and 30 year olds, and they're picking on the 18 to 20 year olds. By the time you get up to 40 and 45, you've outlived your usefulness in that culture, and we wonder why depression, drug use, alcoholism, suicide is through the roof for that.
And they don't have monogamous relationships, right. David, where they grow old together.
Yeah, the Hollywood likes to throw up, you know, your Ellen DeGeneres and like the it makes us want to throw up. But they like to put out the, you know, the two or three couples that have made it 10 or 15 years, you know, and they're Neil Patrick, the example.
Neil Patrick Harris and his partner.
And the but the fact is those are the exceptions to the rule. The norm is as bad as heterosexual marriage is in this country, the norm is still monogamy. The norm for the homosexual relationship is promiscuity. I mean that's what it is, and so it creates a pretty ugly atmosphere built on this superficiality that can't last, right? I mean, why do we stay with our wives, husbands, and wives for till we're 75 and 80 years old? Because we got kids, we got grandkids, we've got you sit around the porch and you talk about that kind of stuff.
What are still hot?
Yeah. Exactly. Right. What are two dudes sitting on the porch talking about? No legacy, no lineage, no. There's nothing there.
What is there to talk about?
There's nothing to talk about.
Well, the minute you begin to marginalize the family and you start putting yourself, your hotness, your achievement, your career, all of those things to the forefront, then what you've gone to a one skill game, mm-hmm. and when that skill is gone, you got no game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what people don't realize is, you know, there might be seven skills in a marriage, and that's only one of them. And you're going to really rely heavily on the six other skills once your youth flower diminishes, right?
But it's interesting you say that because I just wrote
flower.
Okay. Is that a metaphor?
Can I Google that real quick? Yeah.
I just wrote my weekly note to my Sunday school class how that, you know, we have reached a point, I think, in culture where, you know, everybody, you know, we all feel like we have to go to a specialist for everything.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's not okay to be good at a lot of different things anymore. You know, because it has to be the hottest guy, the strongest guy, he has to be all of that. Well, okay, it's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very few and far between. You know, you find somebody that's really good in many different areas. And you know, realize, you know what, that's what's best.
And you know, the sad part about it is the youth today are completely consumed with this idea. You know, not homosexuality, that kind of thing. Even just the heterosexually oriented youth are absolutely just enamored with this. I mean, it's what's causing the anorexia, the bulimia. All of it is
cutting
this, everything. I had one daughter. I had two daughters. I think they're both beautiful, but one of them was absolutely convinced that her teenage years she was the ugly sister.
Mm.
So she didn't care for herself as well. Well, I try. All the boys like my sister. They don't like me. You know, and it's tough.
Yeah,
on these kids.
That's very tough.
They're constantly driving, and they think, well, if I get the right outfit, if I get the right products, if I get the right...
And then the peer pressure doesn't help any.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, because they're not hot.
And they people don't want their money by telling them. Yeah.
All right, what's number two, Brian?
Number two, promote God-honoring romance, not sexual utilitarianism. Just about the worst thing you can do in the process of a hookup is to catch feelings, according to Wade's students. Students simply aim to hook up with someone that they don't particularly like and then break it off. Sexual encounters are merely transactional. We scarcely have words to capture the sadness of this setup. Marriage takes hard work, but God intends for one man and one woman to enjoy one flesh union. Sex isn't utilitarian good. Isn't a utilitarian good. It's the gift to be enjoyed by a married couple that images nothing less than the relationship between Christ and his church, Ephesians 5. To put it more practically, God intends for couples who desire sex to absolutely catch feelings for one another. He wants them to love one another in the deepest possible way. Hookup culture guts sex of meaning. Biblical teaching makes sense of the passion and connection sex yields.
So the irony there is that we want it to be a transaction, not we, but people want it to be a transaction. They don't want to have feelings, and yet it's impossible to complete that transaction and not involve feelings.
Yeah.
Right? You can deny all the time, and people say, well, I don't really care. I don't really like them. And I think
and that comes more of the animalistic.
Yes, and I think the biblical idea that, like what Paul would say, is once you've given yourself to that,
you're emotionally attached.
You have, you, whether you want to be or not, you have now joined yourself to that person.
Yeah, and that's something I've mentioned to the teenagers before. But I remember going to school with a young lady that was dating a guy, and you know, everyone in the academy at the time knew she was, you know, hooking up with her boyfriend. And
being promiscuous.
Yeah. How about being a fornicator?
She probably wore pants too, right?
Yeah, I think she did. but she was doing that, and then everyone would just be like, he's such a bonehead. Like, how are you with him? And she would even admit, you know, the fact that he would do things to make her mad, but she was just, you could tell she was, I'll use the word addicted, or she was connected. Because of the one flesh union that they had taken advantage of outside of marriage.
Mm-hmm. All right, number three.
Train men to care for women, not prey on them. There is schizophrenia surrounding sexuality in our modern culture. On the one hand, we hear that the demolition of a traditional sexual ethic is a great gain. On the other, as Wade reports, students today are suffering from rape culture, sexual assault, the loss of intimacy, the lack of committed relationships, and much more. It's clear to both Wade and me and many others that men are behaving badly in our sexualized age, but the solution to this problem is not to do with away with the Judeo-Christian ethic, it's to recover. Men need to be trained to care for women. They need to protect women. They need to see women not as objects, but as human beings made in God's image. Men are languishing today, retreating to their basest nature. They need a greater call, a higher standard, and a worthy Savior.
Pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
You know, I think what's interesting is, you know, this is kind of the same argument when it relates to men and women, and that is what you see in response to men behaving badly is this power struggle, and women want to, you know, grab the power from men. In the same way, I think that when you see, you know, the culture behaving badly when it comes to civil rights, you know, so the opposite reaction is, okay, well, then we want to have the power. There's no real addressing of the true issues, which is, you know, God made people of darker skin in His image. So we need to treat, no, the whole system is now based to who's going to have the power. It's not let's have a really equal footing. That's never really the issue. The issue is really what group do you want to be in power and to make the decisions, because on both of those narratives, you know, their points actually put somebody at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's never like, okay, let's level the playing field in any of these discussions, whether it's about gender or whether it's about civil rights or any of that stuff.
Yeah, the pendulum has to swing clear to the other side.
Right. It's not enough to level the playing field. There needs to be, you know, more power on our side, whatever that particular side is.
I think his point of, you know, the idea of the myth that eliminating what he calls the Judeo-Christian ethic is going to help the culture is obviously entirely wrong. So we remove God from the equation. Well, now what do we have? Like we said, we've got men with no ideal to follow. We've got women trying to be the men. And it becomes awful Darwinian at that point. You know, it's let the strongest survive and let's fight it out. And it's all about me. It's all about my desires. It's all about what's good for me. And you've got chaos. And so we should, I'm not saying rape didn't happen in previous cultures, but you didn't hear about these kind of things. You know, I mean, think about some of the stories that have come out in the last few years of like guys taking advantage of unconscious women. You know, drunk at parties and stuff. I mean, clearly there's a lot of sin going on in that entire situation. But what kind of man takes advantage of an unconscious woman?
Well, the kind of man that's been raised on a hookup culture.
Yeah.
Well, that he's at that kidnapping party for him and then holding him hostage in a basement just to do have their way with them for extended periods of time.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, there's nothing appealing about that. You know, it's clearly physical. And if we're only going to value the physical, well, then, you know, I'd do what I want to gratify my physical desires. You know, people cease to be people.
And it has tainted our Christian marriages.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, it really has. I mean, the idea that the women are objects creates all kinds of scenarios. You know, you go back to the podcast in the past about the abuse type of thing, and the women, by God's design, their heart is to be to their husbands. So you have this situation where you have a sexual intercourse interaction that takes place, a fornication, and the woman's heart automatically, because the two are supposed to be one flesh, I mean, that's part of that consummation aspect. The emotions, they catch the feelings, you know, catch the feels. And the heart gives to the man, and the man has no training, no value, no anything towards treating her as a prized possession, not prized possession, prized, the weaker vessel, you know, the prized thing to be had, and she's your wife, and she's a treasure to you. Instead, she's just a normal, average
object,
just another object, just another piece of my puzzle that makes me who I am and solidifies my worth. Yeah, she's hot, she's great and everything else, but, you know, she's giving her heart to me. I'm going to treat her however she wants. She doesn't want to break away because I'm always going to give her the opportunity that I might change one day, and in the meantime, hey, give it to me all I want. And if you don't, that's okay. I'll just walk away and go find somebody a little hotter, maybe, or at least somebody who's willing to hook up.
Well, I don't get how the author, Wade, not of the article, but of this book, doesn't connect the ideas that students from point number two that's mentioned, who are simply aiming to hook up with someone they don't particularly like, how that feeds into rape culture, sexual assault, and a loss. How can you not connect the dots that there's a loss of intimacy if I'm hooking up with someone I don't actually like? I'm just satisfying a physical need.
Because the myth is you have now taken control of your sexuality. You are now master of the universe. You are basically God in this situation, and if you're in control, then that's better. But in fact, it doesn't create freedom. It creates more bondage to whether that's sexual sin, whether that's, you know, this promiscuity. It doesn't free you. It's the myth of sexual
and the casualness of it. You know, you look at Carrie Fisher. She just passed away. She's big time. Everybody's talking about her right now. And you have that handoff in Star Wars that these young girls are looking up to. The girl plays Rey. I can't remember her name.
Daisy Ridley.
Yeah. This is Carrie's advice to her. Don't sleep through the entire cast on the first movie. Or the entire production team in the first movie. Spread it out. They're going to make three of them.
Good advice.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the mindset.
So that's how they got it into
episode. So that mindset creeps into the church undoubtedly, right? Mm-hmm. How could it not?
Right.
Well, these girls are listening. They like this. They like the character Rey. So they identify with the actress Daisy Ridley. They hear her interview and her casualness and laughing it off like it's a joke. It becomes a casual laughing, joking matter to them. And then they get themselves into a situation where they can't get out of it. And number three takes in.
And when I was in high school, a girl like that was called a slut.
Or...
Yeah. It was like that when I was in high school too.
Very derogatory.
Yeah, well, and the reputation was well known. You know that, there was
she'll sleep with anyone,
and there weren't 25 of them.
No,
you know that's the difference.
You know,
there's comfort.
But I'll even take it further. In my high school, there was a common phrase that was like this: the difference between a girl who bore the B word, rhymes with witch, and a slut. Was a slut would with anyone, including you, and the bee wouldn't, or would with anyone but you. and that was how we were taught to look at girls in the late 1980s.
All right, number four.
All right, help students see they are not defined by their sexuality. Hookup culture is equally corrosive for women, according to Wade. Sexy costume themes at campus parties reward women for revealing and provocative clothes. satisfy them,
stratify
them, and put them into competition, all while reminding them that it's their job to make parties sexy. By Wade's own testimony, the postmodern approach to sex robs women of their dignity, puts them into competition, and plunges them into unhappiness by rendering them as mere objects. How different the Christian ethic is. It frees women to find their worth in Christ. It looses the chains of cultural expectations. It ends the competitive contests that endlessly play out in one alcohol-fueled room after the next. If a woman is called to marriage, she is given the gift of covenantal love, which God intends to free her from the need to constantly prove herself and draw attention. She's free, gloriously free from her sin and its effects in God. Beyond those called to marriage, men and women alike need to know that sex isn't what defines them. Singles sometimes feel left out of the conversation over sex, but godly singles have a profound and valuable opportunity today. They can show a culture organized around sexual identity that God alone is their all.
Makes me think about Halloween, right?
Is
female Halloween costumes now.
Party like, City.
Well, you can be a nurse. Well, let's be a sexy nurse. You can be, you know, a Pokemon. Well, let's be a sexy Pokemon. Like, ridiculous.
You can be Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. That might be the one exception. You know? But it's like a cartoon character. There's nothing sexy about a cartoon character, and yet you still can make somebody into a objectifying costume that goes on. And that seems to be what Halloween is. It's an excuse to dress provocatively, you know, on all that. Especially for older, you know, by the time they get to their teenage years and college and everything.
And it's
else.
I don't know if our listeners have seen the movie, but I know a couple of you guys have. But Mean Girls, it's been out for years. It came out when I was in high school. But the plot of the movie is the girl and her family are medical people in Africa. They relocate to the United States, and she goes to a Halloween party.
Yeah.
You know, that she was told is a costume party, and so she dresses up as
a
modest, you know, vampire bride or something like that. And the narrator of the movie literally explains, you know, it's like, nope, turns out it's an opportunity for girls to dress like sluts and get away with it. And the culture shock of coming from Africa to be in the United States to deal with that.
Well, and yet, you know, all culture feeds into that because of all the advertising as well. You know, the sex sells, and so, you know, you put a woman up with as little as possible, and, you know, everybody wants to buy that product.
Mm-hmm. It's airbrushed and it's photoshopped and it's, you know, these unattainable standards. And my favorites are like, you know, like the Hardee's commercials where they've got these supermodels eating chili cheeseburgers. That's what they do on a daily basis, you know.
That's how you get a body like that, right?
Exactly.
Like
I'm sure they do that all the time.
And you know, they take one bite and they're spitting it out.
Yeah.
I had a pastor friend who, him and another guy were talking, and he said, you know, somebody probably looks at my wife and the way she dresses and the way she looks and stuff and thinks she's an average cabbage, but I'm okay with that because I don't want anybody wanting my cabbage. And his concept was the idea of is, and she was a well put together woman, but she wasn't dressing to attract attention. She wasn't dressing to be somebody and draw somebody in. She had her husband. He was attracted to her. They were perfectly fine, and he didn't want other men attracted to her.
Well, I think there may be a connection with the stuff before is, if I dress like that, and I create almost a separate persona for myself, I can detach myself from the consequences of my actions. And so if everything's going to be superficial, if the relationships don't want to be transactional, I don't actually want to show anybody my real self. So I create this front, you know, that's attractive and that somebody will respond to. And therefore, I feel like at least I can deny the fact that my heart's in it, and I can approach these things like that. You know, and like I said, I think it's a myth because your heart is involved in it. And then by the time they figure all that out, they've already given themselves out as this person that's not them for so many times.
And, you know, and then the thought, just you saying that, leads me to think of how many marital problems compound upon that because what I think you are, you're not. And then, you know, we get married and then I find out who you really are, and then that's not what I thought you were.
Yeah.
And now I don't like you.
And the fact of the matter is they're going to bring that baggage to the marriage, right? You know, and it's going to have consequences, you know, and you know, there's a comedian that was talking about it, you know, the idea of women were, you know, I want a real man, I want a man that's transparent, I know who he is, and he responded, and he was like, well, then women, you need to start being transparent, you know, take off those high heel shoes, you ain't that tall, you know, take off those fake eyelashes, you don't look like that, take off that makeup, that's not your face, you know, you want honesty and everything, but our whole hookup culture is built on presenting something that's not real. You know?
Okay, so then, gentlemen, is there any balance to what y'all are saying?
Any balance?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think there is. I think that, okay, if our wives are...
Are you talking about in a dating, prior to marriage, or after marriage?
No, do I have any responsibility to present myself well? Is that contributing to the hotness
culture? Well, that's what I was going to say.
Is that the balance?
Is I think that what we have to do is we have to teach modesty. I don't want to say modesty is hot, but modesty is beautiful. And I need to praise my wife when she dresses modestly and express my attractiveness to her so often that she has absolutely no desire to try to get attention from any other source other than myself. And if I absolutely drool over an outfit I know that flatters her, but yet promotes her in a dignified manner, she's going to be more likely to wear it because her heart's given to me.
Yeah, but I can't help but to wonder, Jack, is that kind of picture going to generate likes on Facebook?
No, it's not. No, it's not, and that's the issue.
Who are you trying to satisfy, right?
Yeah.
Who's your audience?
Yeah, who's your audience? How are you trying to satisfy? And I don't know. I have my daughters, and they, you know, one's in college, and sometimes she'll struggle in these areas and stuff, and I'll just flat out, I like what's good. If it's something that borders on what I don't like it, but I send her a message and said, you know, I really wish you'd take that down.
On Facebook?
On Instagram.
Instagram.
On a regular basis. Or her mom will say, hey, your dad saw that picture. He wasn't happy.
Yeah, I think our point is we're not going to... there's nothing wrong with beauty. You know?
No, there's not.
There's no reason to degrade beauty. You know, but there are ways to portray beauty that are God-glorifying.
And we need to praise it.
And in a dating relationship or... striving to find a mate. I mean, yes. I mean, as a whether a male or female. I mean, you know, you want to dress as best you can.
Yeah.
Not to where you're, you know, being revealing and trying to just be seducive or seductive, but you know, you're dressing modestly. You're dressing nicely and be yourself.
Well, and it would be it would be disingenuous for us to sit around and say, well, the physical doesn't matter,
right? Yeah, because
none of us would have spoken to our wives if we weren't physically attracted to them. So that it's not all physical is bad and all spiritual is good, but the physical is so much more easily corrupted. It's so much more easily depraved, you know. And I think that's where we have to be very careful.
But you also have to get, you know, you don't want to act like you're this party animal while you're dating, and then you get married, and then it's, oh, well, you know, I'm just a stay-at-home nobody, and then you're...
Or vice versa.
Right.
Or worse.
Yeah, or, you know, and then your spouse is like, well, let's go out. Well, no, I don't want to. I just want to stay home. But, you know, like, you know, when we were dating, you always wanted to go out. You always wanted... You know, so then there's that contention where you do need to be who you are. And the other...
Not to mention the sexual baggage that you're probably bringing to the bedroom if you've indulged in these activities.
Okay, but so what do we say to the 14, 15-year-old boy and the 14, 15-year-old girl?
They don't listen to podcasts.
I understand that, but how do you communicate with them? What do you tell them? I mean, how do we get these boys to stop drooling over the girls who dress at boundaries or beyond boundaries, even within our church, because if they get all the likes and they get all the attention, then all the other girls are going to want to move to that direction, and it's going to continue the slope.
Yeah. Well, it's what he talks about a little bit in number three and the idea of training them up, but, you know, the fact of guys being drawn by by girls that don't wear enough clothes isn't going away. You know, you have to, nowadays, you have to train your eyes everywhere you go. You can't even drive down the road with the, half the billboards they put up in town. You know,
and you can't, and it's hard to be politically correct today and do what needs to be done. I know, you know, when I was 15, you know, and there were girls like that, you know, my dad would just be, you know, she's probably a slut. Stay away from her.
Okay, but...
You know, or just flat out, you know, that's not the girl you want to be around because, you know, if she dresses like that, she's just looking for any guy that'll give her 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever and stay away from her. You know, but we say that today, and then, you know, you're accused of slandering somebody's...
Slut-shaming, I think, is what the word is.
Yeah, you know, somebody's shaming daughter.
Anything. Yeah.
But, you know, you think, okay, we got homecoming tomorrow night. One of the greatest challenges that has been for the past month is for those checking dresses. And the number of Christian women, the moms...
Oh, they're worse than the girls.
That have just lodged a barrage of email attacks against the rejection of formal dresses because they were too tight. Plenty of material, not revealing in the idea of flesh, but, I mean, but they're too tight from top down, and it's, oh, it's because of her body type, and you're saying, because she has this body type, she can't... No, it's too tight. I don't care how big, skinny, tall, whatever she is. If it's too tight and it's too revealing,
we need to do away with homecoming.
aren't you glad you don't have that job?
but the revealing nature of it isn't so much there isn't a lack of material, but the material is so stinking tight that it's just as revealing as if it wasn't
just as
there.
Honest, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we can't say that it's a hemline length or something.
It's hard to
nature.
Have a hard and fast rule on that. Yeah.
It's almost impossible, and they change the style so frequently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is just an absolute battle each and every year. And I'd say this year has probably been one of the hardest years in it because the mermaid style is now the new hot dress, which means that it's tight all the way to the knees.
Makes it hard to walk.
Women's fashion has never been about comfort.
That's true. That is true. I'm so glad I'm not.
Although it seems like the guys' fashions are getting a little more uncomfortable too. I don't know who decided snug was a good look, but that seems to be the way it's going.
Absolutely. It's crazy how tight stuff is. You know, who in the world wants to put that on? And I saw a guy yesterday at Chick-fil-A and I thought, I mean, who fitted those pants? Because they were obviously a suit pants, you know? Who fitted those? I mean, are you kidding me? You can't grow a quarter of an inch and you won't be able to wear them anymore. You know, there's no movement whatsoever. What is the matter?
Because what you were saying, you know, more women being masculine is causing these men to go the opposite as well.
It is.
And it's like, you know, kind of going back to the principle of, like, you know, attractiveness is important because I realize my wife looks good, she's pretty, so what's my response after 3 years of eating her food? Like, I've gotten bigger. So my natural response is, I got to run, I'm biking, I'm working out. But it's like so many of my friends now, that they'll do that, but then they'll selfies without my shirt on, and it's just like, why would you do that? Like, there's no...
And they start buying into the cultural ideal of things like skinny jeans.
Well, you'd get made fun of.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm saying PCC guys.
Oh,
like,
I know. I'm just saying, you personally,
like, you might not be on staff if you did it.
Well, I know.
This room would light you up.
Right. Well, I know that, but I'm saying I don't have a desire to do that. I just want to look good for my wife.
Right.
But whereas the culture today, it's like the guys are showing more and more, and it's like, look at me, and it's just...
Right, but all of that is rooted in insecurity,
mm-hmm.
and that has to be addressed.
Yeah.
That's where this is coming from. Is I'm not comfortable in my whole person. So I have to dress that way or I have to dress that way. I mean, intellectual prowess is frowned upon in school. You're too smart.
Yeah.
You
wouldn't want to make the other kids feel bad.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
So they're embarrassed about being too smart.
Heather got barraged for that.
Absolutely, on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, because you make us look bad. When we think the curve is going to be this way, you rock the curve out
of the thing. You know,
there is no curve.
Right, right.
There is 100 right every time.
Right, exactly. So damn, it becomes very problematic.
More points.
You know, and so the spirituality is shunned. Intellectual
excellence
is shunned. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, anything like that, if it's too much on a ball team, five ball players, if one of them is too hard of a worker and is making the other ones look bad,
slow down.
Right. It'll be shunned.
Yeah.
It's really unfortunate the degree to which all this is backfiring on that which is God glorifying. Mm-hmm. And it's creeping into the church in every way, shape, or form. When we have the same apps, when we use the apps the same way, when a Christian girl posts a picture on Facebook to see how many likes, when the mom puts the immodest picture of the girl on Facebook, and then the mom solicits, and then you've got "so sexy" as a comment being put down by a Christian. Is that really what we want? Do we want a 14-year-old being classified as so sexy?
Yeah, we've talked about it before, how that bleeds into the dating idea. And, you know, we promote it and we take the pictures and it's so cute and they're hugging with their boyfriend and this is the one most cute thing ever. Well, by the time we get to boyfriend 5, 6, 7, and 8...
It's getting a little old.
You have set up the conditions for a disastrous dating life / marriage for the rest of their life. Because you've trained them to throw away what's old and to pick up something new. Yeah.
And we do it without thought.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what everybody does.
I mean, I can't tell you, because I get all these emails daily from all the applications wanting a tour, these type of things, as we get this online enrollment process. The number of emails that I have seen come in with "sexy mama something or other," "sexy eyes this," or "sexy that," or "sexy this."
And you're talking about their email.
Their email address, sexy mama with blue eyes at gmail.com.
Right.
I mean, I don't think I actually saw that one, but similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
All the way through the process.
I gotta change my email address.
or the ones
Dave,
that,
isn't that your spam account?
Or the ones that are the ones that
sexy
at
gmail.com.
Or the other ones, you know, you get an email in from them and they've courtesy copied like their spouse into the email or something like that, and it's yeah, so funny. And it's all like baby's daddy. You know, and that's the label, and you're like, okay, I don't even know your husband's email ad now because all I got was this
she doesn't know what it
label,
is.
And it's insane.
Yeah.
The way that we, and these are strong Christians. This one, you know, is a strong Christian, and they've just adopted the terminologies without thought, and it simply reinforces
behavior and thinking that doesn't need to permeate the church.
Because every time they send an email to a friend, with their husband included in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what happens is these folks who are so grilled on hotness are 40 years old and they're still single.
Yeah.
Because everyone at 21 and 22 and 23 and 24 and 31 was not hot enough, wasn't this, wasn't that, and now all of a sudden I'm 42 and I'm not dating anymore, and I've pretty much resigned myself to a life of celibacy because the bar has been so high as to what you're looking for in this potential spouse.
And I think Owen, the author of this article, has hit upon something as the foundation's idea, and that is what Wade would call the transactional and what we would see as the biblical, which is the covenantal. And what you see, what you described right there with 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds is the problem with transactional is, number one, we know from the nature of man, I can never make the transaction right. The gospel tells me that I could work my rear end off until I die and never be righteous enough. But on the flip side of that, Christ, who was sinless, became my righteousness. And this is a covenant once for all. But we simply don't live that out in the church because what we're always looking for more. We're looking for the next thing. Always, and we treat it transactional. I mean, it's a great, great terminology because what we want from a transaction is supposed to be it's good for both sides. That's what, but that doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
businesses go out of business if they don't charge you more money, you know, than doing something costs. That's the way life is. And so it's same thing emotionally. You know, every interaction with my wife, one of us is going to give and the other one's going to get a little more. It's just the way life is. And when it's always got to be, I'm the one getting, then it's death. But the problem is, that's exactly the gospel. We don't have a hope of fulfilling the transaction, but Christ fulfilled the transaction once for all, and that's called a covenant. And so the marriage is supposed to be an image of that, not of the, you know, equal for both parties. Because there's nothing I can bring to Christ. There's nothing.
Whereas a hookup is equal for both parties.
Supposedly, but it's not really.
But it's not, but that's the idea.
Mm-hmm. For a married man, that's not going to work.
Okay, let's just be honest. If it's a hookup, what guy is really going to devote himself to getting the girl there?
Only if he wants to hook up again.
Only if he wants to hook up again, but that's against the nature of the hookup, because that's how you catch feels. Which is the phraseology that they would use. So we're talking about a culture of one-night stands, supposed to be devoid of, which is why they're all over President Trump. Because that kind of life has a consequence, and I need to be free from the consequence of that life at will.
Right.
And I can make that decision all the way up until the end, just before birth occurs,
right,
or should be able to. And that's the ideology behind it. And so these women are fighting for this an equality in sexuality that actually leaves them deprived and...
fulfilled?
Well, unfulfilled, and I would dare say.
Leaves them unfulfilled, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because they don't climax.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And because we've been created to be in a covenant with God.
So we're designed as covenant people.
And anything other than that is rebellion.
Yeah. It's not going to be fulfilling.
Right.
Right.
And rebellion at its root is always unfulfilling.
It's going to be void.
Yeah.
Well, it's not much different, David, than what you described with the homosexual lifestyle, because when I'm 60 years old, I'm not hot anymore.
Same idea.
And nobody's going to want to hook up with me.
Right.
Right. Whereas if I've been in a covenant relationship with somebody for 35 years, it doesn't matter whether I'm hot. This is my best friend. This is the person I've done my entire life with.
Yeah,
we're going to the grave together.
Right.
I can't imagine waking up without you by my side. Not because we have sex once a week or three times a week. It's because we have done life together, up, down, and everything in between.
That's what John was talking about, the legacy.
Right.
And it's best described, that lifestyle, the transactional lifestyle, is best described as you live by the sword, you die by the sword.
Mm-hmm.
And we see people like that in Scripture. I mean, I would argue David was like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, and what did God tell him? You're not building my house.
Mm-hmm. Solomon was certainly like that.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, Solomon was like that. And so that certainly contributes to that. Well, folks, thanks for listening to this examination of the hookup culture and how it's permeating into the churches in America and the necessity to address it in very practical, open, direct, often blunt ways, especially your singles and your teenagers and your young married. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.